Well, we're late, folks, but we're here. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. The problem is somebody has control of the satellite and won't let go of it, and so we couldn't get on the satellite and had to go through the phone lines to WWCR, and somebody at the satellite company is going to have to answer for this screw up, and they will, I guarantee you. Let's go directly to Phoenix and hear from Gene Miller. We haven't heard from you for a while. Gene, what's happening?
Well, been busy. been a lot of activity going on in the gold market here as of late. Before I forget, I've had several requests from people calling wanting silver rounds. Well, I have a bunch of silver rounds. So give us a call. Well, they're just going to go out first come, first serve. If you call and tell them that you're from William Cooper, or that you heard me on the radio tonight, you can call tonight 1-800-289-2646, and you can leave a message on the voicemail, and somebody will get back to you first thing in the morning. But we have a special discounted rate for some silver rounds, and I'm not sure how many there are, but there's a few, but they'll probably go pretty quick. So you might want to call tonight or call first thing in the morning and talk to your broker and order those up before they're gone. Gold and silver. We thought gold was going to probably push up over 400, got pretty close, but the Fed yesterday decided not to raise interest rates, which doesn't surprise me. This is an election year, and so they have to make things look as good as they possibly can. They kind of candy coat it and make things not look as bad as what they really are, so they didn't raise interest rates. They probably will shortly after the elections are over with. Anyhow, gold had a high of 398.40 today, a low of 394.10 to close at 394.40, down $3.50. Silver had a high of 571 and a low of 559 to close at $5.60, down 11 cents. Platinum had a high of 420.90, a low of 416.50 to close at $417, down $2.40. And the Dow had a high of 38.90.60 and a low of 38.64 to close at 38.78.10, up 15.10 points. What other bit of news? We just came out, I believe, last week. Now, some of the people have already got it. Some of you that are already clients of Swiss America's, and particularly mine, they should have gotten a new newsletter. It's called True Lies. There's a lot of good information in there, some information about the upcoming bill that's in the House and the Senate as regards to precious metals and numismatic coins. You make sure you want to read that. If you haven't gotten one, do give us a call. Again, the number is 1-800-289-2646. We'll be more than happy to get one out to you. And that's what's happening in the wild world of metals.
Thank you, Gene. We appreciate your attention to duty.
My pleasure.
Take care.
All right, sir.
Remember, folks, call 1-800-289-2646 and do it tonight. You'll be glad that you did.
Thank you.
tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have two guests in the first part of this hour, or what's left of the hour after we had to screw around trying to get on satellite and wasn't able to. The first guest for the first half hour will be Cliff from Cleveland, and we're not going to say any more about who he is except for that little introduction, unless he wants to. But Cliff has been listening to the Hour of the Time for some time now, and actually was turned on to shortwave radio, I guess, by Tom Valentine. Is that right, Cliff?
That's correct, William.
And decided to come out here and see what's what and who I am and spend a couple of days with us. Unfortunately, he got here on Monday, and the center is closed on Monday and Tuesday, and that's something that I forgot to tell you folks, unless I just have work that I'm doing here, but I do a lot of my work on my computer at home when I am able to do that. So he got here on Monday and has been playing catch-as-catch-can with me, and I decided to ask him to come on the broadcast tonight and talk a little bit about the way things are where he lives. But first, let's talk a little bit about your state of mind in all of this. Are you really awake yet?
I'm awake.
And what was it that made you look around and say, things just aren't right?
Well, I've known it for, in my opinion, I've been awake but asleep. Awake meaning that I knew things that were wrong for at least 20 years. I'm 42. For 20 years, I've known we're in deep trouble.
Uh-huh.
I thought I was alone until I got my shortwave.
Well, that happens to a lot of people. They get a shortwave radio, and all of a sudden, they can't believe their ears.
I didn't come out here just to meet you, Bill. I came out here, as you know, Cleveland has 2.5 million people in it.
Right.
I can guarantee you, I live in suburbia. If I was dragged out of my house in the middle of the night, my neighbors would say, well, you must have done something wrong.
The normal sheeple response.
And I wanted to come out here and investigate the lifestyle and the people. And I'm impressed.
What have you found? Let's talk about that, Ben. What have you found out here?
That people here are American citizens. They own weapons. You can walk the street at night and know you're not going to be accosted.
Yeah. Well, our second guest will have something to say about that a little bit later on, because one of her worries when she arrived here was, is it safe for me to jog in the street? I couldn't believe that question. But and you've looked around and you've looked at property. And
yes.
What impresses you most about this portion of Arizona? Because I guarantee you, folks, not the whole state of Arizona is like this. Big cities like Phoenix and Tucson are no different than big cities like Cleveland.
That's true.
So what has impressed you the most? What do you like the most about this part of Arizona, besides its obvious beauty?
The denseness of it. Maybe that's not the right term. The expansiveness of it. I mean, you can go up into the hills and get hit if you want to.
You can go 5 minutes from here and get hit if you want to. nobody will ever find
that's
you
right.
In a million years.
And that's what I like about it, the expansiveness of it.
Well, tell me about Cleveland now. What prompted you to leave Cleveland besides the fact that nobody would believe you were innocent if they drug you out in the middle of the night and spread your weapons out on the lawn and took pictures of them and said, oh, we found their cash or weapons in this guy's house?
I'm at a point in my life where I'm a self-employed person. Cleveland, as you know, has terrible winters. And if I can go where like-minded people are, which they are here, then there's nothing holding me back.
Great. Now, you told me there was something the other day that you felt kind of sheepish, if I may use the term, about being a self-employed person. You were doing something that all of a sudden didn't make too much sense to you. What was that?
Paying federal income taxes.
In other words, you were ratting on your own self. You were.
Yeah, I said I was stupid. I mean, nobody's taking money out of my check, and I'm sending it to them.
Well, let me make it clear, folks. If you have declared yourself to be a citizen of the Federal District of Columbia and you volunteered to pay income tax, then you have to do that. You have to file and pay. But if you haven't done that, or if you've extricated yourself from that situation, then, of course, you're under no obligation to do either. But have you done that?
Extricated myself?
Yeah.
Not completely, because I'm in the system, Bill. I'm working my... Part of this move is getting myself out of the system.
So you're going to extricate yourself.
Yes. In fact, I bought some very good material from you, so that when something does come down, I at least know my basis in law.
Uh-huh. You feel safe here?
Yes.
At any time? Anywhere?
Anywhere.
Good. Because you certainly are. Now... I know that you drove quite a few miles to get here. What was the country like in between? I mean, did you feel safe anywhere else?
Well, I flew into Albuquerque.
Uh-huh.
And I drove straight here. It was about a four-hour drive.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you drove all the way from Cleveland.
No, I didn't. Okay. I have to be at work tomorrow night. So.
Yeah. Well, Albuquerque is not very far from here. In fact, a lot of people came to the convention, flew into Albuquerque, and then rented an automobile and drove over.
But I have driven to Colorado a couple of times, straight through.
And what's your reaction to what's happening across this country? I mean, when you're driving, can you see things have changed from like 10, 15 years ago? Is it obvious that, in other words, if somebody came here from Japan and drove across the country, what would be their reaction?
I don't know, Bill. I'm not following the question too well.
Well, for instance, I know people who have come from what used to be known as Eastern Europe, the communist bloc, who have come to the United States since the Iron Curtain has fallen. They've been able to do that now. And I have been told by these people that what's happening here is what happened over there years ago before the curtain went up. And Germans are telling me now that what happened in Germany in the 30s is happening here. And they can see it, and they're very disturbed because Americans can't. That's the first thing that they say. I don't understand you people. Don't you know what's going on?
Now I'm following the question, and I can answer that very well. I'm in my occupation, I get to talk to a lot of different people. And just 2 weeks ago, I got to talk to two lovely ladies from England.
Uh-huh.
And we got to talking about this very subject. And everything that is happening here has already or is happening now in America. Their politicians, their laws, their currency. This is worldwide.
Well, Americans have a misconception about England. They think that England was the father of democracy, I mean the Magna Carta, all of these things that happened in England that sort of paved the way for the freedom of the common man, they say. But the common man's never really been free in England. He's not free now. He can't say what he wants. But most Americans tend to think that England is and always has been like America. And that's just not true.
No, it's not. But one thing is true. They don't like Major at all.
They don't like what?
Major.
Oh, Major, yeah. Okay.
They know that he's selling them out.
Yeah. England is, in fact, a socialist country and has been for many years, and they are being sold out. In fact, that's what Margaret Thatcher was warning about, giving up the sovereignty of the nation and of the British pound.
Right.
What do you see coming? The reason I know the answers to a lot of these questions.
Of course.
But one of the reasons I asked you to come on tonight is because you're one of the people who has been out there listening. And there's a lot of people out there listening who think that they're all alone in this world and they want to hear from somebody else that's like them and not always me.
Right.
So what do you think is coming down the pipe?
Well, William,
what do you see?
This is a puzzle. I mean, you gotta research, and a lot of this comes from your heart. If you're not listening to your heart, I think you better start listening. This is a puzzle you've got to put together. The taxes, where your money's going, the laws that are being passed. You've got to check into these laws, folks. This is the police state. If they pull a plug on the currency, they've already got all the laws in place that they need just to pick and choose whoever they want. And when you're hungry and you don't have any food, you're going to do anything to eat. So You've got to put the puzzle together. You have to read. You have to read between the lines what's in the media. If what you really should do is turn off the TV.
Well, that's certainly my advice.
You're not going to get anything you need to know.
So you think this is all going to be promulgated by some kind of an economic situation?
Oh, definitely. To me, that's how they're going to get the guns, too. You don't give me your gun. You don't eat.
Yeah, well, I think that you're right. And I think it's not far off, based upon the military activity. And by the way, folks, don't miss tomorrow night. Don't you dare miss tomorrow night. You're going to hear a tale of a confrontation between an Arizona militia patrol and some of these black uniformed people. So make sure you stay tuned tomorrow night. It will help you jar yourself awake a little bit, I think.
About the puzzle, yeah. Also part of that puzzle is those 90 executive orders that have been signed. I've got a couple of those executive orders. You won't be able to buy a toothbrush, folks, without federal approval. That's how far they've got this nailed down.
And they really do have it nailed down.
Oh, it's nailed down. Call your congressman. That's how I get them. I call. I say, I want some of these executive orders, and I name off the numbers.
And just out of curiosity, because I don't know if you have or not, have you seen the treason papers that we...
No, I haven't.
Okay.
And as you know, I'm a new intelligence service member, so...
Yeah, that's correct. You read the oath today. You had some questions after reading that oath. Well, we're serious here, folks. We really are.
Well, in your book, you say anybody, and this is dealing with the secret societies, if you, and I, you know, my brother is a Freemason, and I can guarantee you, William, he has no idea what he's doing there.
Most of them don't.
And well, exactly.
And that's the intent of this, the degrees of initiation, is to pick and choose and weed out those who will make a good worker in the performance of bringing about the New World Order, and those who will not. And it's just like Albert Pike said in his book, they're intentionally misled.
Right. And in the book, anybody that joins anything that doesn't know what that organization stands for, what it means to be a part of that organization, is a fool. So when I read that oath, I said, I want to know what I'm joining, William.
And we told you.
Right. And I had no problem with that. Yeah. Because basically that oath was to uphold the Constitution that I love, and I'll die for it.
That's right.
Probably will.
Until it becomes a liability, and then we'll do something else. Right now, that's the way it is. How long are you going to be here?
I'm leaving tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
And where are you going?
I'm driving into Albuquerque. I have to be on my flight at noon.
Uh-huh.
I have to turn in my car, which I almost didn't get.
Have you had a chance to browse through our library?
Yes, I have.
What do you think about it?
That Holy Bible from the Freemason Holy Bible blew me away.
Well, did you get a chance to sort of...
A lot of those books I have. I have.
Oh, that's good. That's about 1/4 of what we have is on the shelves now. It's quite a few. We have much more coming. And I understand that some members are sending us some books from their libraries, which from telephone conversations sounds like a quite extensive collection.
One thing I did know, I knew that the JFK assassination was an inside job. I knew that from the very... I was 11 years old when it was done, and I knew it then in my heart. But the thing I didn't know that really blew me away was I did not know that the driver did it. That really intrigued me. I'm settled with it now, but...
Well, it's hard to believe, but until you see it, until you get a real copy of the real Zapruder film with no footage missing, and watch it and see how it's been doctored to hide what happened, and to, in effect, make it sort of look like it was a reflection on Agent Kellerman's head. When you have a true copy of the Zapruder film and you have a good forehead VCR and you can put it on pause without any lines across the screen or jitters or anything and really examine each frame, which we've put together a videotape that has that capability, that you can do that because we've gone frame by frame through the whole film. You can see how they doctored the film and actually erased the taken the emulsion right off the film to hide what they've done, and erased shoulders and arms and all kinds of things. Covered up the true wounds on Kennedy's head. One thing you can discern, though, is that there is no wound to the back of Kennedy's head whatsoever. Not even one hair out of place on the back of his head. So that's a good point, because the assassination of his anniversary, I guess that's true too. The anniversary of his assassination is coming up very soon. Were you aware of the significance of the location and the name of the street and
not until
the time of day? And
not until listening to the hour of the time. And folks, if you haven't got William Cooper's book, would you owe yourself a favor to read the book? I really am just waking up to this Freemasonry thing, but I read the book. Now I can talk intelligently about it. This is all symbolism. These people only pay homage to themselves, folks. You need to understand. I'm sure a lot of you out there don't understand what this Freemasonry is, these secret societies.
Freemasons, for the most part, don't understand what it is unless they have elevated themselves to the highest degrees. What does your brother think that he's a part of?
I have to talk to him about this.
He's never communicated to you before any...
I never had any interest in it before.
Good for you. Smart people never would.
I've studied Buddhist philosophy for since I was 19 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not talking I just read. I have studied it. I've gone from the mathematics of it to the algebra or beyond that with some of the authors. I understand when it was explained to me in the book, and maybe I'm not going to be the average person like that, but when I read the chapter, I think it's the very first chapter, second chapter in your book, it just came together. I understood it as soon as I was I understood what I was reading because of the symbolism.
Are you referring to secret societies in the New World Order?
Yes.
Okay. You told me something today that took me aback a little bit, because I'm a speed reader. I read books like people eat popcorn.
Right.
You said, I know I gave you a copy of my book last night. You'd never read it before, so you came in today and said you read the whole book.
Right.
Can you sort of explain to people out there what's in this book? It's sort of an overview. I mean, you don't have to go chapter by chapter or anything, but sort of give them an idea so that they can hear it from somebody else besides me. What's in this book? What's it about?
Well, if any veteran listeners to the Hour of Time, of the time, that listens diligently, has probably heard bits and pieces of this book through the shows. It deals with population control, AIDS, aliens. Last month, HBO had HBO made for movie called Roswell. It pretty much went the way of your book. Your book... The movie followed what you said in the book. It was interesting.
Uh-huh.
And folks, there are hundreds of stars, millions of stars, hundreds of galaxies out there. The chances of there not being intelligent life out there is pretty slim.
Also, the chances of our problems being blamed upon somebody from another planet is also pretty slim.
Right.
So you have to be careful. We know that there's been a plan in existence since at least 1917 and maybe before to create the illusion of an artificial enemy from space in order to create the scenario where people would be willing to come together as one world in order to have one voice and confront that enemy. One of the scenarios is like, who speaks for planet Earth? I think it's a little bit obvious when you find things like the speeches that John Dewey made in 1917, when you find out that Orson Welles was a relative of H.G. Wells. H.G. Wells wrote a book called The New World Order in 1939. Orson Welles, in 1938, I believe it was, aired the Mercury Theater presentation of War of the Worlds, and... we believe that that was an experiment or a test, if you will, of the premise that the people would believe an alien threat number one, and number two, would take it serious enough to take gun in hand and go out looking to shoot aliens, and that's exactly what happened when they aired that. Now, in this modern day and age, I can understand how someone could be ready to believe that scenario because of the things that have happened. I mean, we've gone to the moon. Why can't somebody else come here? Maybe that's why we went to the moon, to convince the population that somebody else could come here. Because it didn't make sense to go to the moon and stop the space program like we did. What do you think about that?
I think that that's a very good possibility, but I really believe that the UFOs exist.
Oh, they do. We know they exist. We don't know
who
they all belong to, but we know at least some of them belong to human organizations and human
governments. Where'd they get that technology?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that. I don't have the answers to everything, but we try.
Well, at least you say that, and that was another part of the book that I liked, was that when you put forth a theory, you say, if this is a theory, now you're going to have to search it out for yourself and come to your own conclusion.
Well, that's the only intelligent thing to do. Cliff, we've reached the halfway point. I want to thank you for being a guest on the first half hour of the Hour of the Time.
Thank you for having me, William.
We're going to take a short break, folks. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. For the second half of the Hour of the Time tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a young woman who has been listening faithfully to this broadcast for some time. She looked around her and fled sleepless from Seattle and is now sitting in studio, waiting breathlessly to tell you all that I'm full of baloney. And here she is. Carol from Seattle, welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Hi, Bill.
What prompted you to make this trip? And you did drive all the way, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and I told you not to ask you that question.
Ask you what question?
Why did I come down here?
Oh, is that what you were asking me not to ask?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were asking me not to ask you anything.
No.
And you knew I wasn't going to do that. Well, tell me about the Seattle, the area where you live. I think it's interesting, some of the things that you told me that prompted you to take an assessment of your life and what you had and what you were doing, and had nothing to do with this trip. But what's the situation up there?
It's terrible.
And what does that mean?
Well, I'm surrounded by people that have no idea what is happening.
By no idea.
They're in their illusion. Yeah. Everything's wonderful. Everything's happy. It's going to always be this way. There's always going to be a Safeway store open 24 hours with everything they want on the shelves.
And they don't... were they disturbed at all by Waco?
No.
Waco didn't bother them? How about... No. Did they know about the Randy Weaver incident?
No. And they don't care.
Boy, that's an indictment. How many people where you live do you think have any idea what's going on in this country?
Not very many. That's why I want to leave. I feel alienated there.
So you feel like you're alone except for maybe two or three other
people?
No,
there are people like me. But when I look at the number of people that I tried to give information to or talk to this subject about, they don't care and they don't want to hear bad news.
Mm-hmm.
And they shoot the messenger almost every time.
Well,
or intellectually,
I certainly have some experience with that.
Right, or intellectually they understand it, but they were not the ones attacked.
So it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay if they break down somebody else's
yes.
door, but if they break down mine, I'm going to get angry.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
I understand that scenario. What do you think about this place?
I like it here.
Now, you asked me the first night that you were here if it was safe for you to jog in the street. What do you
think? Worse than that, I checked into the hotel and I put my stuff upstairs and I came down. There was all these guys on the first floor sitting around staring at me and I got nervous. And so I went inside to the receptionist and I said, "Is it safe here?" And she just laughed and said, "Well, they're just construction workers." I said, "Yeah, but why are they staring at me? And they stopped talking. She says, oh, they're fine. And then that was it. And they never bothered me. And I felt perfectly safe ever since.
Well,
I've walked around here in the middle of the night in the dark by myself on streets I have never seen. And no one has even, you know, done anything or even I don't feel any fear.
And you shouldn't, because nobody would ever
right.
lay a hand on you here. And if... I'm surprised that a pretty woman would wonder why construction workers were looking at her. That doesn't make sense to me right there. You have been listening for how long?
I hate to confess this, but only about 4 months.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that just tuned in tonight and never heard this program before.
Actually, I can't really listen to your broadcast because it doesn't come in very well.
Uh-huh.
And so what I do is I buy tapes that sound interesting, and I listen to those. Because I have some tapes that a friend of mine taped on his cassette, and I really cannot hear anything.
Uh-huh.
We have terrible reception there.
Okay. Have you tried a long wire?
No. No.
You should look into that. You know, even if you have only been listening to the tapes of the broadcast for 4 months, I mean, 4 months of broadcast of the Hour of the Time is so intensely packed with information and detail and educational material that... that 4 months of listening to this broadcast would probably be equivalent to listening to Rush Limbaugh for about 50 years. Because that's how long it would take you to begin to grasp the situation as we know it, listening to somebody else.
I think better than your, maybe not better than your broadcast, but what is excellent is your Atlanta series,
mm-hmm.
the series of four tapes.
These are videotapes.
Videotapes. And I got those from a friend, and they are the best because you cover so much material in detail, and it's excellent.
Well, you know those tapes aren't available anymore.
I got copies. I don't lend those out.
That was about a 7.5-hour workshop that I did in Atlanta, Georgia, and every moment of it was taped. What were some of the things in that workshop that surprised you or shocked you or...
Well, that's the first time I learned about the symbolism on the back of the dollar bill.
Uh-huh.
That had me.
That had you going?
I had to keep rewinding it and taking notes, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I got very angry.
Well, most people do when they realize that our forefathers aren't any way, shape, or form who they've been told that they are. Not that they were bad. I mean, they gave us this great opportunity to be the first and only free people who have ever lived on this earth in the whole world, but it was a grand experiment. Has it succeeded or failed?
I think it failed.
Why?
People are lazy.
Okay, well, that's exactly what they said. They knew human nature.
I know.
And they knew that we would probably fail.
And I'm just as guilty as the next person.
And so am I. For most of my life, I was stupid. And there's no other word for it. Absolutely stupid, believing everything that I heard, everything that was told to me, and going off to fight a war in Vietnam, thinking that I was protecting the country. And that's what all of us thought. We were doing our patriotic duty, not understanding that we were just a bunch of fools. And that's the truth of the matter. Do you think it's ever going to change? I know that's
pessimistic now. I change. Sometimes I have optimism, and I think we can change it, but right now I'm feeling pessimistic.
So you think human nature is always going to win out in the end? People are going to take the easy way, the not look for responsibility?
Well, I think it's too far gone.
Well,
or actually the program is progressed too far.
I think that you're probably right, but don't you think we owe it every effort to try to reach some kind of a amicable solution before the blood starts flowing?
Well, I don't want the blood to flow, and I wish we could do it another way. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Well, I certainly don't want it to flow either. In fact, that was the original purpose of everything that I was doing, was to try to wake up enough people so that never had to happen. Because by sheer weight of numbers, everything could be changed if enough people were to wake up and make their demands known.
it would change things around. Everything is a result of the wishes of great numbers of people, because government only exists at the will of the people. And that's true. People don't understand that. They think they're helpless, but they're not really. Now, you also do something else that's very interesting. What's your hobby?
Which one? Which one are you referring to?
Well, you
I have many hobbies.
You shoot?
Yes, I shoot.
And you enter shooting matches?
Yes.
What weapons do you...
Well, it's a sport called IPSC, and right now I shoot a 38 Super.
Okay. You participate in any rifle competition?
Well, I just started, not rifle competition, but I just started learning how to shoot rifles.
Uh-huh.
Just for my own information.
Do you reload?
Yes.
So, you're not in any way, shape, or form one of these anti-gun nuts?
No.
No.
You
understand the purpose of the second article and amendment. And
everyone out there should take the retirement money, cash it in, and buy guns.
There you go.
And ammunition and reloading equipment now.
Now you know why she's a guest on this program. We did something interesting this morning. Okay? Why don't you sort of recount our little trip this morning from beginning to end? And
well, which trip? The first trip I took or the trip with you?
Both of them, whatever.
Well, the first trip I took was with a person named Tim, and I told him I was fairly unfamiliar with shooting rifles, and he was going to give me some instructions. So where I live, it's hard to shoot further than around 150 yards. The ranges are restrictive, and here you can shoot as far as the eyeball can see, practically.
Don't stop talking, because I'm going to go get some coffee.
Okay. You better be back soon.
I'll be back.
Anyway, so we went out to the range, and Tim taught me how to adjust the sights on one of my rifles, because I was unfamiliar with it, and how to shoot long distance with it in the proper way to hold it. And I was very surprised to learn that I could see further than 100 yards using the open sights and not with a scope. So I found that enlightening, as it were.
And
I have more confidence now with my iron-sighted rifles. I thought I was going to have to scope everything, and now I realize I don't have to do that.
And you found that you could hit a target at a long distance with the iron sights.
Yes.
And that's a revelation, not knowing that a lot of people prefer to use iron sights over a telescopic sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, how about the second trip?
Second trip was with you and Tim and another member of the party and your daughter, who was very good. And we worked on some more long-distance shooting. I shot your rifle twice and just about knocked me on my ass. What was the caliber? Big.
It's the long-range rifle. It's a 375 H&H Magnum Improved, which is a Wildcat round, which holds about 25% more powder than a normal 375 H&H Magnum, which is already an elephant gun.
That's the biggest, most powerful gun I've ever shot, and it did knock me back quite a bit. But it was fun.
Were you impressed at all with the open expanse of space that we have here? I mean, most people live in places where you can't go out and shoot 1,000 yards with a weapon unless you go to a rifle range.
Well, and I told you before that when I go visit my uncle in Montana, we have the same kind of open expanse.
Uh-huh.
And we just get in a car, or actually his truck, and we go to an area that he's familiar with where there's a big hill, and we just shoot.
And where were we shooting today?
I don't know.
Can you describe the countryside?
Well, it's a lot different than where I come from, and it's dusty. To me, it's very dry, and in some ways unfriendly. I'm used to green and wet, uh-huh, not dry, and knowing there's snakes everywhere and scorpions. Who knows what else out there? But beautiful, very beautiful.
Yeah, it is. But one of the things that makes our shooting safe is we have canyons and washes, and we can go out to these washes and shoot 1,000 yards up into a box canyon. so that there's no danger of anybody getting hurt from a ricochet round or accidentally shooting somebody's cattle or anything like that. And we were shooting at a range of about, anywhere from 100 all the way up to 1,000 yards today, and hitting within 6 inches of a bullseye at 1,000 yards is something that most people don't get to do. What did you think about that?
I liked it. It was great. I'm jealous.
Well, it's I know a lot of people out there are probably jealous, but it's something that we have here all the time. If you could go back home and somehow tell people something important that you've found out from this trip, what would it be?
I have a good feeling in knowing that there are people like me with the same ideas and the same concerns, major concerns about our country. And I don't have to convince anyone here. They understand that it's a threat, and they're preparing for that threat.
And one thing you've learned is everybody here has weapons, rifles and pistols, and a lot of the people that you meet every day are carrying some sort of a weapon, either in their automobile or on their person. And I hear on the news, and I hear people talk all the time, that if they lived around people like that, they would really be scared.
Actually, the most comfortable I feel is when I'm shooting a match.
Uh-huh.
Everybody has a gun at their waist with magazines filled with rounds of ammunition,
uh-huh.
And I feel very safe there.
So people wearing weapons don't scare you?
No, I love it.
Why does it scare other people?
I don't know. I believe it's unfamiliarity with the equipment.
You see, one of the reasons why we don't have a huge, tremendous crime problem here is because you're taking your life into your hands if you mess with somebody who's carrying a weapon. And that makes people think twice before they go to knock somebody on the head while they're walking out to the parking lot from a restaurant, because you don't know if that person is going to pull out a pistol and shoot you dead if you go to knock him on the head. And so most people don't try those shenanigans where we live. What are you going to do when you get back home?
I knew you were going to ask that. And I don't know. I don't know that I'm going to do anything. I'm going to think about it.
Well, there's going to be a few people who are going to ask you about your trip. Oh, so, something I thought was interesting. You said that people all along the way kept telling you, were surprised that you were alone, and I got the impression that when you told them where you were going, they thought that you were somehow in danger or something. What was that all about? I'm not sure that I really understand it all.
Well, I think part of it was people would ask me, is your boyfriend going with you on the trip? And I said, no, I'm going by myself. And then they get this funny look on their face, and then they say, all by yourself? And I say, yes. They said, oh, well, why don't you fly? It's safer. I said, I don't want to fly. I want to drive. Well, okay, but be careful. And everyone told me to be careful. And I don't understand what the problem is.
You know what it'd be? It might be just an extension of the gut feeling that everybody has that something's wrong.
Something is wrong.
Yeah. And everybody feels that, no matter who it is. I mean, even the people back home that you say are denying paying attention or don't care or whatever, I even they feel that something's wrong, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Now, if they feel that something's wrong and they've sort of got the fantasy curtain pulled down, how do you think they're going to deal with that feeling?
With what feeling?
That something's wrong.
I don't know.
You've got a feeling in your gut that something's wrong. You don't know what it is. It's kind of hard to ignore that. It is for me, anyway.
They're pretty successful at it. I see it every day.
Oh, boy.
I'm surrounded by that at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What, if anything, do you think can be done to jog people out of their lethargy?
I've given this thought for 5 solid months. I've done nothing but listen to video listen to audio tapes, watch video tapes, read as many books as I could. I've gone to the library. I've done research. Friends of mine have talked about this. What can we do? And at first I thought, you know, in along with how you feel, that if enough people knew, we could turn it around.
Uh-huh.
But the problem I'm facing, at least with people I try to tell, is, well, yes, they understand this, but then they just go on. They don't want to hear anymore. They don't want to know anymore. They don't want to really do anything.
Henry? Henry Aldrich? Coming, Mother. Oh, Henry, I just don't know what to do today. Everything is just so safe and secure in this little burg we live in. I mean, if I didn't have to come out and call you to dinner, I just don't know what I'd do.
Does that about sum it up?
Yes.
You know, I used to have a record, and this record had the craziest music, and I wish I could find it again. If anybody out there knows anything about this record or can find it, please let me know, because I'd like to have it again. This was years and years ago. And it had this crazy music, and then this just real bored voice would come on and say, "Open the door, flies swarm in. I close the door and it's hot again. Life sure gets tedious, don't it?" And it went on like that. And it was an incredible picture of mediocrity that most people, I think, are mired in. You know, I used to be one of these people who thought that work was important, position was important, and having been in the military and fought in Vietnam was important, and all those kinds of things. And I would talk about the same things that everybody else did. And one day I went down to the local watering hole where everybody was doing that, and for the first time in my life, I really listened to what everybody was talking about, and I left, and I never went back again. Never, because not one single person in there said anything that was of any consequence or importance whatsoever. How many people do you know that the most important thing in their life is who played third base for the Mets?
I'm surrounded by it. I told you that. Or O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
You know, let's hear what's going on today with the trial. I mean, who cares?
And that seems to occupy at least 80% of the population's time, conversation, and...
I mean, our freedoms are vanishing in front of our face. And they are worrying about O.J. Simpson.
You know, have you seen any of these new TV shows that have cropped up on television lately? Cops, Top Cops, Lady Cops, Super Cops, Detective Cops.
No, I try not to look at those.
Cop Leader, any of those things, SWAT Cops. I mean, the networks are full of these shows. They're full of them. And every night, one of these shows is on some station somewhere. And people sit in their living rooms and watch police dressed like terrorists with masks over their face, no identification whatsoever, at least on the front. Some of them have police on the back, but when they're charging you in your living room, you don't see that. Break down doors without announcing that they're the police, without warrants, searching homes, taking people prisoner, stealing their money. One night I watched as the police went down the street with this reporter in the back seat with a camera. And they saw some young men, well-dressed. They didn't even look like bums or hoodlums. Well-dressed, standing on the street corner talking. They pulled over, rousted them up against the car, searched them all. They found about, I think it was $300 or $400 in one of these young men's pockets. They confiscated his money, didn't charge him with anything, didn't take him in, told him if he wanted his money, he'd have to come down and do the necessary paperwork and everything in court. Now, when we investigated this, we found out nobody ever gets their money back, no matter what they do. But Americans, so what bothers me about this, Americans, where this is never supposed to happen, watch this on television. And simply because they stopped and rousted this young man and found $400 in his pocket, now in every home across America, this young man is called a crook. And the police were justified in taking his money. And Americans don't see anything wrong with this. How do you feel about that? That's just one instance. I mean, every night they've got something else, breaking down doors and seizing property. And in many instances, in fact, I would say most instances, nobody is ever charged with a crime.
I guess what I can't believe is that people allow the police to do that to them without saying no.
Yeah.
Saying absolutely not. You have no right to do this. And if the police persist, then the person has the right to defend themselves because they're being attacked.
That's correct. And we just learned that somebody not too long ago was sitting in their living room with a weapon in their lap. I don't know why they had the weapon in their lap, but they did. Maybe they just cleaned it, or maybe, I don't know why. But they had a weapon in their lap, and the stormtroopers came bursting through the door, and they killed several of them and got off scot-free, which is exactly what he should have done because they didn't announce themselves. He didn't know who they are. You got people dressed like ninja warriors with full face masks charging through your door. I mean, that's quite fearful, isn't it?
I shoot first.
Well, that happens every day and every night across this country, and most people don't shoot. Have we reached a state where the people have been thoroughly brainwashed
yes.
into being beautiful
yes.
little sheep and
yes.
never complaining or,
yes.
or resisting anything?
Completely.
That's quite an indictment of the American people, isn't it?
It's a fact.
Now, what you're just telling me is the Constitution is not working. We have no protection of our rights. That's what you're really saying, isn't it? How did it happen?
I don't know. It's been slow. Little by little. Over time.
Nibbling, you might say.
Yeah.
A little bit here, a little bit there. And of course,
didn't even know it was happening.
And then all of a sudden it's gone.
All you have to do is go to the library, look in the public laws, read them. You won't believe what's in those laws. Everybody's a criminal and they don't even know it.
Now, folks, I didn't tell her I was going to do this. But what I have just been doing is describing Germany in the 1930s to her, and she, without any hesitation whatsoever, equated every bit of it to the United States in 1994. And she's absolutely correct, because it is the United States in 1994. But everything that I have just described, everything that I have read off, except for television shows, was what was happening in Germany in the 1930s. But even though it wasn't televised, the same things were happening. They didn't wear ninja suits and full face masks. They wore brown shirts and jack boots. And I want to apologize to you for doing that, but I did it for a reason, because I know that everybody out there sitting in your living room were thinking the same thing. And that has to come home. I mean, if you were listening last night to my broadcast about the real meaning of the symbology in the movie called The Lion King, which is being taught to your children, you have to understand that the same thing that happened in Germany is happening today in this country, and for the same reasons. And they are racist. And at the end of The Lion King, when the golden age was restored, and the young lion took his rightful place as the king, and all the different herds of animals came to pay homage to this king, if you were really observant, you noticed a complete absence of the hyena. They were no longer there. And they represent the black and Hispanic races. If you're black and Hispanic, you better...
You're dead meat.
That's right, you're dead meat. The people who are bringing all this about call you useless eaters. And then I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail now from the European Alliance and the Aryan Nations and all of these people that like to write me hate mail. And I always get these letters with no return address and these big packages full of racist material from Nashville, Tennessee. with neatly typed labels on it so that nobody can ever find out who this person is. I know I'm going to get this mail now talking about all of this stuff and how I'm a race traitor and all this kind of stuff. I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that racism is probably the greatest plague that has ever afflicted the human race. And I think that a lot of this stuff involving the races is created. You see, I don't think we'd have large numbers of blacks living in inner cities on welfare, dealing in drugs, if Lyndon Johnson had not created the welfare state. I think that we would have a completely different America now, and I think we'd be a lot closer to what we should be, which is one people. I think that the border has intentionally been allowed to be open, and immigrants from other countries come into this country to create racial problems. And in a way, I think it's kind of the fault of the American people for thinking that they are due a fat salary and a big car simply because they were born. It's not true. And these people who come into this country, the reason they come is because there's jobs available for them that Americans just will not do. Somebody has to do those jobs. And when you have a welfare state that's ready to give everybody a check, no matter who it is, simply because they refuse to work, we're always going to have this problem, aren't we? I think, folks, that most of the problems we have are a result of our own ignorance, stupidity, and apathy. And we can look around and blame anybody we want. You see, if we would all come out of that state of ignorance, apathy, and stupidity, then we wouldn't be plagued with these problems. Good night, folks. And if I can find my exit music here, God bless you all. Thank you.